ETF Prime is hosted by investment advisors of the ETF Store. This program is for informational purposes only and does not constitute investment advice. Investing in ETFs involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Any past performance figures discussed are not necessarily indicative of future results. The ETF Store is not affiliated with ETF.com or any of its affiliates. ETF.com's participation in this program should not be construed as an endorsement or an indication by ETF.com of the value of any ETF Store product or service. Visit ETFstore.com for more information.
Now it's time for ETF Prime, where we discuss everything you need to know about exchange-traded funds and the world of investing. Whether you're an investing expert or just starting out, Nate will help you get up to date with what's happening on Wall Street and show you how exchange-traded funds can help lower your investment costs, reduce your tax bill, and allow you to take advantage of investment opportunities around the world. And now, the host of ETF Prime, Nate Geraci.
All right, so anyone who's followed ETFs for even a short amount of time has likely heard the fear mongers out there. They keep beating the same drum. They're pushing this narrative that once we have a real market disruption, ETFs aren't going to hold up. Liquidity will evaporate. There's going to be trading issues. ETFs will somehow fail or exacerbate market declines. You name it, we've heard it all. And by the way, this despite the fact that ETFs existed during the dot-com crash, they existed during the global financial crisis, all the other market disruptions since 2009, you know, taper tantrum, Brexit, the 20% decline in the fourth quarter of 2018. And guess what? There have been zero issues. And now we have yet another example with what's occurred over the past several weeks with this coronavirus situation, where we saw the fastest stock market correction ever, record trading volume, all sorts of volatility. Yesterday, we had a circuit breaker trigger after stocks dropped 7% right out of the gate over concerns with oil. And guess what? Once again, best I can tell so far, no issues with ETFs. It sounds like there may have been a couple of bad prints on some ultra short bond ETFs, but certainly nothing major. In just a moment, I'll be joined by ETF.com's editor-in-chief, Drew Voros. We're going to get into this topic. Because look, if ETFs did experience issues, everyone would be all over it, and rightfully so. But I think we need to highlight when things go well. And the fact is, ETFs passed another test. I don't know how many times they need to do that, but this is another example for the naysayers. So Drew and I will talk about that, and then we'll also take a quick look at the latest ETF flows as well. Now, the entire remainder of the show, this is going to be fun. I'm going to delve into one of the fastest growing areas of ETFs, thematic ETFs. These cover robotics, marijuana, video games. The idea is to capture longer term, typically disruptive trends. Right now, ETF.com shows about 90 thematic ETFs available, nearly $25 billion in assets. I have two excellent guests to discuss this. Leighton Spahr, president of Alps Advisors, and John Mayer, chief investment officer at GlobalX. Both firms offer thematic ETFs. And the backdrop I'll set here is with something I actually saw from Cambria's Meb Faber around the time they launched a marijuana ETF last year. He said, quote, "Lots of times, thematic funds are simply used to separate investors from their hard-earned dollars by capturing the hot theme of the day." So I'm going to talk about that with both Leighton and John. What makes for a good theme? How do you decipher a fad from something that could be a longer-term disruptive theme or trend? And assuming you're able to figure that out, how do you best evaluate the thematic ETFs that are out there, and where do they fit in a portfolio? We're going to cover all of this later in the show. As always, questions or comments, you can find me on Twitter, at Nate Geraci, or you can go to ETFprime.com. Let's start this week with ETF.com's Drew Voros.
Time now for our weekly chat with the experts at ETF.com, the world's leading independent authority on ETFs.
I think we're seeing a different way of ETFs being launched. The real kicker was governance, selling of private data. They really let down their customers repeatedly.
Drew, so we're going to get into the ETF fear mongering and how ETFs have acquitted themselves pretty darn well over the past few weeks. But first, I have to ask you, any thoughts on the markets right now? Coronavirus, oil, the Fed, there's a potential for fiscal stimulus. What are you watching right now?
Well, Nate, thank you for having me as usual. One of the things I'm watching is a little bigger picture than ETFs, just market structure. I thought everything worked perfectly yesterday. Sunday night was sort of a fire drill. You saw that this was going to be an ugly opening. And everything happened the way it should. It fell 7%. Circuit breakers went on for 15 minutes. Market came back on. And we pretty much held that 7% loss throughout the day. And of course, today we're up 3% or so at the moment. But with that, you do get a little bit of dislocation, price dislocation. We did have some hiccups on some funds that was quickly corrected. But nothing broke, whether it be on stocks, bonds, or ETFs. And I think that's a real tribute to some of the work that's gone on since we saw the flash crash a couple years ago. There is really market structure in place, and ETFs fall into their own place. And we had some headlines about certain geared funds, like a oil fund that almost went to 75% loss for the day, which would have terminated it as Velocity shares three times long crude oil, ETN, UWT. But guess what? Today it's up 10%. It's seeing inflows. And the other thing that I think is just remarkable in some ways, despite the sell-off, for instance, last week, we saw $9.5 billion worth of inflows into ETFs. And just from some preliminary look, it looks like we had about $5 billion in inflows yesterday. So not only are ETFs working, but people are using them. And the other thing, too, is just the diverse kind of ETFs that are out there. We all know about SPY and S&P 500, but going back to this oil ETF, it's a trading tool. And the trading tool worked perfectly the way it was designed. And if it had hit rock bottom and would have been terminated, that's exactly what they're supposed to do. So if you're going to get into certain funds, you better know what the outcome could be in the worst-case scenario. And frankly, yesterday, as Dave Nodig, one of our good friends, one of the smartest people I know in ETF universe, he said last week, I was going to write a blog Sunday night, which I started, and then I started panicking, like, well, I'm going to put out this blog that says ETFs are working perfectly when I know there's going to be an ugly opening. But last week he told me that, you know, ETFs have passed the test. Let's put the nail in the coffin of this fear-mongering, as you put it. And I think yesterday they came through again with an A+. So I just don't understand why we even have this conversation anymore.
So, I mean, if I'm hearing you right, Drew, I mean, you do feel like maybe we can finally put these ETF myths to bed. Because, you know, I think about this. The fear mongers have been out there for a long time. I'm guessing some have probably crawled back into their shells after the way ETFs have performed over the past few weeks. But, you know, I feel like the more popular ETFs have become, the more we've heard these sorts of claims. They're often from active mutual fund managers, right, who have been losing business to ETFs. But to your point, we've had all this market volatility recently, record trading volume, sharp declines, circuit breakers, and there have been no issues with either stock or bond ETFs. So can we finally put these ETF myths to bed?
Well, we can, but let's face it, okay, a disruptor is disrupting. And the folks that ETFs are disrupting are just waiting for ETFs to trip so they can point at it and say, see, this is not the way to go. And you're absolutely right. You have to look at the motives and the context of the people that are pointing out that this is a boogeyman. And the boogeyman are themselves. And the fact is that ETFs are working. It's the greatest financial product of our time. And we keep seeing it over and over again, and people keep throwing darts at it. And frankly, they're looking silly at this point.
You mentioned the flash crash back in 2015. How much do you think that contributed to some of these myths? Because ETFs were sort of caught up in this. You know, it was much more of a market plumbing issue when you look at what happened. This wasn't an ETF structural issue, but I do feel like a lot of the fear mongers have sort of hung their hat on this. Do you think that's been part of the problem?
I think so, but again, as time goes by, the credibility is there. Now, the flash crash, pretty much, that's what my fear was Sunday night. We had this circuit breaker that went off, and when the markets opened, there was dislocation everywhere. We saw premium and discounts and all kinds of ETFs, and it was not an orderly market open. We saw that yesterday. The wrinkles have been ironed out, and it doesn't matter what exchange or where it happened. All together, the system worked, ETFs worked. And I think, if anything, the credibility has just been doubled. over the last 2 weeks for this product and frankly, the way markets are working now.
Well,
and no news is good news, right? I mean, I searched all day yesterday waiting to see something happen, and nothing happened. Just the markets went down, and they went down rough, and everything went down. And as we say, you may not like your price, but if you have an ETF, you'll get a price. If you're sitting there holding a bond, good luck. But ETFs performed. They gave investors prices. There was clear price discovery. And I mean, I'm not a cheerleader. I'm a journalist, and you are too. We're not here to cheerlead ETFs, but, you know, I have to give credit where credit is due.
Well, for people who are concerned about the way ETFs price, I always say, you know, ETF prices are only good as the prices of the underlying securities they hold, period.
Right.
End of story. And the fact is, if there's an issue with individual stocks or individual bonds pricing correctly, ETFs are going to have pricing issues as well. It's that simple. But, you know, more importantly, because ETFs do trade intraday, they do actually operate as price discovery vehicles. And yeah, like you said, you may not like the price, but you'll always get one. You know, I think of the high-yield bond market here over the past couple of weeks where, you know, if you look through to this, a lot of those bonds don't even trade. And guess
exactly
what? The junk bond ETF, you look at HYG, that has acted as a pricing mechanism. It's essentially automating a bond market that, quite frankly, is still in the dark ages. But you know, it comes back. The question I always ask when you hear ETF fear mongers is, what price would mutual fund managers get, or institutional or individual investors owning the individual securities? Why would it be any different? The ETF is simply a wrapper, right? It's a good wrapper, typically lower cost, tax efficient, flexible, but it's just a wrapper.
Well, think about this too, Nate. On a mutual fund, you got to wait to the end of the day to get your price, right? And an exchange listed product, you can get your price during the day. And you pointed out a great fund, HYG, from last week. One day we saw $1.5 billion go through that fund, and it held up perfectly. In and out, we saw big inflows, big outflows, but people were using that tool, and they were using it efficiently. And again, you got your price, you could get out, and if you don't like the price, no one's forcing you to sell.
Something else I always like to point out as well is ETFs were actually born out of the 1987 stock market crash, right? So the SEC had this idea for a security that represented a basket of stocks and could be traded mm-hmm. like a stock. And the thought was this might be able to add liquidity to the markets, act as a shock absorber. And that's exactly what we've seen over the past few weeks. I just think it's good to go back and have some context as to why ETFs were actually created to begin with.
Well, I'll give you one example. Say Tesla, for instance. We saw some days Tesla down 10%. I wouldn't want to be sitting on that single stock right now. I think it's down almost 30% from its highs. But if you have it in a basket, you probably have other funds that are mitigating that loss, right? And that's the beauty of the ETF, is that it makes it easy for the investor. And again, if you want to make it difficult for yourself and you want to try to game the system, you can use something like the Velocity Shares 3x long crude oil, ETN, UWT, if you think you want to bet that. But that's a bet. And there's a big difference between all the tools in the ETF toolkit. Some are bets, some are investments, some are strategic. But that's the beauty of the landscape we have right now.
Yeah, but the fact is, you look at what's gone on over the past couple of weeks, there have not been any issues with ETFs. And I want to reemphasize something that you said earlier. If at some point ETFs do have an issue, I want to be clear, we're going to talk about it here.
And
if we look yesterday, as all the data comes out, again, I've been looking through everything as you have, Drew, but I haven't seen anything yet. If we find that there were some more serious issues, we'll talk about it here. We're not going to be one-sided and only cheerlead when things go well. Now, I will say, moving forward, if ETFs do happen to have some sort of issue, going back to my earlier point, I think it's highly likely you would see similar issues with mutual funds, right? Or individual investors who own those securities. The ETF is just a wrapper. It ultimately gets back to the underlying securities held. But until something happens, and that may be never, we may never have any major issues, but I think it's time for the fear mongering to stop. There's just no evidence here. I have to read you, you may have seen this. I know you're out on Twitter as well. I saw a great tweet from Ritholtz's Josh Brown last week. He said, quote, ETFs uneventfully handling hundreds of billions of dollars worth of transactions each day. Under what scenario would the alarmists be right about the structural risk they pose? Flaming antelopes galloping across the trading floor, knocking over specialists? I love that. You know, I mean, I think that paints the picture. It's like, what do you need to see at this point?
And I also think, again, let's look at the big picture. I think it's market structure. We didn't see any stocks go weird on trading. We didn't see ETFs. I haven't, frankly, have heard of mutual funds being dislocated in any way. So I think overall, the market structure provides the platform for ETFs to perform the way they are and allows other securities to perform well. And that's a nod to the exchanges. That's a nod to the SEC. When something breaks, you need to fix it. It was broken a couple years ago. We saw it. But we haven't seen anything since. And no news is good news, but nobody wants to report that, you know, the sun came up this morning and it's a nice day. They want to report that it's going to be cloudy, rainy, and, you know, hurricanes coming. That, you know, fear sells.
Yeah, that's the definition of a fear monger.
Yep, and fear sells, and good news doesn't sometimes. But the fact of the matter is things work well. Let's keep our fingers crossed. We can't be complacent and think it's always going to work this well. And as you said, as soon as we see some problems, you and I will be the first to address them.
Drew, briefly going back to ETF flows, you mentioned the big picture. I'm just curious, if you look down at the individual ETF level, is there anything at all standing out to you? And let me do this. I'll rattle off a few performance figures so far this year. So SPY, the Spider S&P 500 ETF, that's down about 15% prior to the open today. VEA, Developed International, down 19%. VWO, so emerging market stocks, down 17%. BND, so aggregate bonds, up 5%. TLT, long bonds, right? The iShares 20-plus year treasury bond, that's up almost 30% year-to-date. Mm-hmm. Gold, GLD, that's up 10%. And I have to throw in, I know we don't have a Bitcoin ETF, but Bitcoin is up 12% on the year. But on the ETF side, anything else standing out on flows?
Yeah, I just think fixed income. We're seeing fixed income last week took in $8 billion. And granted, maybe some folks aren't using the right motivation for bonds, because as we know, as yields go down, prices go up. So we're seeing price appreciation in bond funds. And that's typically not why you get into a bond fund. You're getting into for diversity, a low price appreciation, and you want the yield. But I think what we're seeing is, again, going to the toolbox. Equities were clearly on fire, although I will say last week there was $1.5 billion in inflows into equities last week during the worst of it. I don't have the exact number from yesterday, but we're clearly seeing, you know, it's not just equities, and you have been in the business longer than I have, but we used to just be pretty equity heavy in the ETF market, and now we have all these new particular U.S. fixed income products. People are using them. That's the go-to product. And in a time like this, when people are jumping into safe havens like bonds, like GLD, gold ETFs, it's all there for you. The palette is full.
Yeah, and it's good to see that diversification has been working, right? If you've owned bonds and some of those safe havens, it's been beneficial to your portfolio. Drew, we'll have to leave it there. Always appreciate it. Who knows what's going to happen between now and next week. I'm sure we'll have something to talk about by then, something new. But thank you for joining me this week.
Thank you for always having me, Nate.
That was ETF.com's Drew Voros. All right, my next guest is Leighton Sparr, president of Alps Advisors. They're a unique firm in the ETF space. They currently offer 10 ETFs with over $8.5 billion invested. but they also handle marketing and distribution for some of the most popular ETFs out there, including the sector spider ETFs and the United States commodity funds, like USO, the oil ETF. Layton was previously senior vice president and leader of the value and income team at Oppenheimer Funds. He also previously served as a portfolio manager for what's now Columbia Threadneedle. And he's joining me via phone this week from Denver. Layton, a pleasure to connect. Thanks for taking the time.
It's great to be here, especially with all the interesting events in the marketplace. It's always good to talk.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. I know we're going to focus on thematic ETFs this week, but I guess before we do this, do you have any quick thoughts on what we are seeing in the markets right now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, really, we started, you know, near the end of February when we were at highs on the S&P and we were, you know, still pushing very low volatility levels. We had this environment of complacency, right? We started to see the world react to some of the COVID-19 news. And the U.S., you know, like our response with testing, I think our response in the equity market was a little bit delayed. And as we've seen the role of the virus go through, we're starting to really understand how impactful that's going to be for the markets, really through the profit mechanism. And then over the weekend, I mean, I have to admit, it was a very big shocker, the gamesmanship that's going on between Russia and Saudi Arabia in the oil markets. And it's just classic uncertainty. And we started from a point of, you know, low implied volatilities, high valuations, and everybody was feeling good together. And in the course of a month, all those expectations have changed. So, you know, I know we're going to talk about thematic investing a lot. The foundation of thematic investing really is about long-term patience and finding trends that have durability. This is the kind of market where patience, durability, resilience, you know, that's the mantra. In my opinion, we're not dealing with big systematic dislocations in the marketplace. This isn't the financial crisis. This is something that will come and go, but it's going to give us profit impact and, you know, may put us into a short recession that just wasn't priced in. So, you know, not crisis mode by any means, but, you know, it's a reminder of what the equity markets can do to us when uncertainty rears its head.
Yeah, no question. And certainly none of us have a crystal ball. I mean, I think, you know, what we're all evaluating here is whether or not there's going to be longer term, more lasting implications, or if this is going to be more transitory, perhaps we get a shorter term disruption and move on down the road. I think that's what we're all watching right now. Layton, let's move on and talk thematic ETFs. So ALPS currently offers three ETFs falling under this category. Let me rattle these off. There's the ALPS Medical Breakthroughs ETF, ticker symbol SBIO, the ALPS Clean Energy ETF, ticker ACES, ACES, and the ALPS Disruptive Technologies ETF, ticker symbol DTEC, DTEC. I guess first, how do you like to define thematic ETFs, just at a high level?
Yeah, I mean, for us, thematic investing is a framework that focuses on positive, long-term, monumental change. And then specifically, we're looking in areas around technology change, societal change, politics, demographics, environment, and economics, right? So there's a group of really big kind of top-down categories that we think a monumental change in, and then we're looking for a unification of business models, industry dynamics, and investments that fit those macro top-down themes. We also want to make sure that there's a long-term component to it. When we're looking for thematic opportunities to build into an ETF, we want to have at least a decade of runway in front of us around where we think the change is going to come from. So it's the length of change and it's the magnitude of change that really characterizes something for us as thematic.
Well, I think you hit on something that's really important, because I think investors looking at the thematic ETF space, it's not always necessarily easy to tell what may be a longer term, more monumental change versus what's sort of the flavor of the month, right? The hot theme of the day. Any tips on how an investor might be able to tell the difference between those two?
Yeah, so we have a framework where we think about the pace of change, and, you know, fashion is a great example of something that we don't think is thematic, right? So think of fashion or product-driven cycles as, you know, something that has a very fast change, is very hard to predict. You know, products and fashions of today have a very, very low chance of being, you know, the same product and fashion, you know, 5, 6, 7 years down the road. And then we start thinking about categories. You know, really the slowest change is human nature. So when there are things around how humans organize in cities or, you know, how they organize politically, those are multi-decade cycles. And, you know, thinking about smart grids and how those factor into cities and the urbanization of the United States and all these things, that's an example of something that we think there is thematic underpinnings to because of the slow change of the nature of people. And in the middle of that pace of change framework that we use, we think of culture, we think of governance, we think of infrastructure, right? These are all things that change much, much slower than fashion or products, but not quite as slow as human nature. And so we'll categorize different ideas as we're thinking about potential themes within those areas of fashion and commerce, culture, governance, infrastructure, and nature. And the more we can identify the sustainable change, the more we put it from fad over to theme. So there's a huge element of fundamental investigation, and there is a subjectivity to classifying something as a long-term thematic change versus a short-term fad. But we do have a framework where we think really about the pace of social change. And that's how we categorize, you know, is it long-term enough, is it monumental enough in order to be called a theme?
Leighton, I came across a really interesting piece, I think it was last week, from Morningstar's Ben Johnson, and it was on the topic of thematic funds. I'm not sure if you saw this, but I did want to run it by you just because I really liked how Ben framed this overall. So he said investors in thematic funds are essentially making what he calls a trifecta bet. They have to, number one, pick a winning theme. Number two, select a fund that can actually harness that theme. And then number three, invest at a point where the market hasn't already priced in that theme's potential. And he said, you know, look, the odds of hitting all three of these are low. Now, he did say the payouts could be meaningful if you did. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a great writer. I did read the article. I thought it was a very good framework for advisors and investors to approach their own decisions about where in their portfolio do themes belong. And I think the first two points that he made were right on, you know, that you have to put some thought into identifying the right theme. And that gets back to, you know, some of those long duration, pace of change type of thought processes that you need to put into a decision around a theme. So, you know, like one example, there's cloud computing themes, software as a service themes, cybersecurity themes. All of those are examples of different levels of abstraction, right? Cloud computing is an architecture. Software as a service is actually a revenue model. And cybersecurity is an application often through a software as a service revenue model within a cloud computing architecture. And, you know, so as Ben's describing, you have to think about what level of abstraction fits your portfolio construction appropriately. Cybersecurity as an application probably has a much less durable role in a portfolio than something around cloud computing, which has many more manifestations of what the architecture is actually delivering. But being able to have that assessment of what is a great theme is exactly the right place to start, and I agree with him on that. Now, as far as getting into how you're expressing that theme, I mean, that's really where the experts are most valuable, is breaking into the methodology of different ETFs. Right, because there is a high percentage of thematic ETFs that I think are looking as much for buzzwords and business model descriptions as they are the actual underlying fundamentals of profits that are driven by the thematic underpinning. And you know that's where, you know, I think the research around individual ETF methodologies is really helpful. I mean, for us at ALPS, what we try to do is, you know, write individual pieces about the methodology at least on a monthly basis that give all of our clients plenty of resources to dig into how are we classifying individual companies into the categories of themes that we've identified. You know, the last piece as far as timing, the more robust a theme is, I think the less critical it is to think about, you know, is this on a six-month run or is it on a six-month lag? If it really is around an architectural change like cloud computing or disruptive technology, even more broadly, you know, then what I love about the thematic approach is that it's consistent with the most fundamental teaching of good investing, which is be patient and let the long term work in your favor. So, you know, I think the comments from Ben are probably more applicable and more specific you get around a theme. And, you know, there are individual segments of disruptive technology that may get a little faddish. You know, I think like one example that's included in our disruptive technology ETF is 3D printing. Now, 3D printing by itself has gone through a number of fads and a number of cycles where business models become very, very popular and then they kind of blow up. Because we fit that into a broader disruptive technologies context, it's not that important to think about 3D printing by itself. But if you were investing in only a 3D printing ETF, then the timing and the fad component of that is something you have to take into account. I agree with Ben in that regard.
Leighton, you mentioned portfolio construction. At the end of the day, what do you view as the benefits of using thematic ETFs in a portfolio? And let's just assume it's a well-diversified, I don't know, traditional 60-40 investor. What's the benefit of using thematics?
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea of using thematics really grows out of the old traditional categorization of things as sectors. And, you know, sector classification is a pretty broad, slow-moving description of how common business models are grouped together. And I think what themes allow you to do is focus really on that long term. It is inherently a growth-driven philosophy, at least the way we cast it, because it's around long-term monumental positive change, which is just another fancy way of saying we're looking for secular growth. So it is taking the old-fashioned sector construct, trying to peel out secular growth themes within it. But then you can look at it from a correlation standpoint, which is really where the portfolio construction element comes in. And you can customize these themes in a much more complementary way around correlations than you can at the more broader sector level. You know, so if you're looking at a life sciences theme that's really around biotechnology, and then you're looking at something that's around cloud computing, the relationship of those two businesses at the fundamental level is relatively low. And so you can build in some fairly good diversification benefit by looking at two growth themes separately. Whereas when you look at it just from a sector standpoint, if you just call it healthcare or you just call it technology, some of those correlation complementary dynamics are harder to identify.
Leighton, we have just a few minutes left. You briefly mentioned DTEC, but tell us a little bit about the three thematic ETFs offered by ALPS, exactly what they do.
Yeah, so DTEC, just to reinforce that one, it's ALPS Disruptive Technologies ETF. You know, something that I think is really unique about that is that we blend together a number of disruptive themes into a single one-stop shop for disruptive technology. And those themes over time can change. So if we identify something that we think fits that long-term monumental change mold, and it's got a decade-long runway in our mind, we will add that. At the same time, if we find something that doesn't really live up to our expectation of a durable long-term trend, we can take it out. But it's really a portfolio of themes where you have Internet of Things, clean energy, cloud computing, data analytics, fintech models, artificial intelligence, cybersecurity, 3D printing, and mobile payments. So I think a lot of those buzzwords will resonate with your listeners around, oh yeah, I can see how those things are going to change the way we live and do business over the next decade. And what DTEC allows an investor to do is get exposure to all of those things so that they can be consistent and long-term oriented, right? It avoids some of the fads that come along with just fintech or just mobile payments. We do similar things with our clean energy ETF, ACES. It's the ALPS Clean Energy. And we're not just looking for wind, or we're not just looking for solar, but we piece together really all of the components of what we think the new renewable, sustainable energy grid is going to be built from. So it's everything from smart grids and LED companies to the wind and solar infrastructure providers. And we even put in biomass, hydrocarbons, hydropower and geothermal. And then we get into some product companies around batteries and electric vehicles. And then, you know, the holy grail of renewable resources are fuel cells. And there are a few companies in there that definitely reflect that theme too. But again, it's a one-stop shop to think about where are we going to be a decade or two decades from now in our whole energy portfolio as a planet, and making sure that we have exposure across all those. And then our last big theme is the S-Bio is the ticker, and it's medical breakthroughs. This is small and mid-cap biotech. But what we're looking for that I think differentiates the quality element is we're looking for companies who have a drug that's in late-stage development. So we're not just playing that roulette game of early-stage money-losing companies. We want to make sure that there's volume in the way that the stock trades and that there's longevity and, you know, phase three drugs that are in trial that are really on the cusp of changing the way healthcare is done. So those are the three. We want to be fairly broad with our themes, and it really is to emphasize the long-term nature of why we think these things work.
Leighton, as you go through those, you know, that's a pretty diverse set of thematic ETFs. I'm just curious, what's the strategy moving forward? And I know you're not going to get into specifics in terms of potential ETFs you may launch, but how do you build that suite out moving forward?
Yeah, so, you know, the first thing we're doing to build out that suite is we're hiring more fundamental research analysts, right? So after 20 years as a portfolio manager, I started my career in the 1990s as a semiconductor analyst. And the thematic mindset that you build as a fundamental stock analyst is something that we're really building out here at Alps. And so, you know, we've already hired three more people with that skill set. I'm not exactly sure where their themes are going to take them, but our strategy right now is let's build out active fundamental research analysts that can identify themes. And, you know, the idea is to make sure that whatever we launch next has an investment merit to it. So we want to be known as one of the most critical of fad-type themes and making sure that those don't become part of what we're known for. So, I don't know exactly what's next. It's hard to predict. We definitely are committed to the thematic ETF business over the long term. But whatever we come next with is going to have a very compelling 10-year-plus foundation that it's built on.
Well, Leighton, great to connect. Really enjoyed the conversation. Let's certainly do this again down the road, but appreciate you joining me this week.
I appreciate it as well. And yeah, hang in there with the volatility.
You too.
Okay. Take care.
That was Leighton Spahr, president of Alps Advisors. I'm now joined by John Mayer, Chief Investment Officer at Global X, who currently offers 72 ETFs with over $11 billion in assets. And without question, Global X is a leader in the thematic ETF space. They offer ETFs covering robotics and automation, cannabis, video games, lithium and battery technology. The list goes on and on. And if you're not familiar with John, prior to Global X, he ran Merrill Lynch's ETF model portfolio business, where he oversaw nearly $50 billion in ETF strategies. And he's now overseeing Global X's ETF model portfolio business as well. John is on the line with me today from New York. John, great having you back on the show.
Thanks, Nate. I'm glad to be on the show.
So, John, before we delve into thematic ETFs, I've asked all my previous guests this week, any thoughts on the current market environment?
You know, it's a fast changing story. You have a couple intersecting stories. One, obviously, the coronavirus and its potential impact on earnings, and also the disruption, and not thematic disruption, the disruption to our daily lives in terms of traveling and vacations and just kind of protecting ourselves and family, to kind of the intersection of what happened yesterday in the oil market, where we saw a drastic reduction in price in oil as a result of some players overseas, Saudi Arabia and Russia, and that subsequently brings into kind of a broader question of how is, potentially lower oil prices going to impact certain firms and their access to capital and their ability to service debt? Subsequently, how does that impact banks? And then it gets broader than that in terms of if there's a slowdown in revenues for airlines, which is likely, other leisure and hospitality type of companies, which is likely, does that ultimately have an impact on banks, and is this something bigger if it extends for a longer period of time. Those are some of the lingering questions. Obviously, we hope some of the things I just mentioned don't come to fruition, but it's certainly food for thought. We certainly haven't seen a move in the, at least a point move like that, ever. percentage point move, not since 2008. So it remains to be seen. It's you know, early days, I think. So it's a fluid story.
Well, let's move on to what I hope is a much more lighthearted and fun topic, which is thematic ETFs. And I want to start by asking you about a term that you actually coined that's definitely relevant to thematic ETFs. It's also now been trademarked, as well as I understand it. The term is conversational alpha. Do you want to explain what that means? And I'm curious how you came up with that.
Sure. It has been trademarked. It's been trademarked by Global X. And I used the term when I was at Merrill Lynch. So at Merrill Lynch, I ran their model portfolio business, which became a meaningful business within the Merrill Lynch system and was utilized probably by half of the 16,000 financial advisors that are at Merrill Lynch, meaning the financial advisors use the portfolios for their clients. They were asset allocation models. They were single asset portfolios. And for the portfolios that were focused on sector investing, which were actually the more popular portfolios, I thought that it would be interesting to not only just take a broad view of sectors, but in certain areas, whether it be technology or healthcare, look at subsectors. So within technology, you would look at cloud computing, you look at internet, you're within healthcare, you would look at biotech as a subset of broad healthcare, which is obviously included in broad healthcare. And those became good talking points and good sources of excess return over benchmarks. And as we know, you know, the definition of alpha is just the excess return of an investment relative to the return of a benchmark. Add in the term conversation, it's a good way to convey a deeper, more memorable discussion around, you know, portfolio management or portfolio construction, which is what I do and did at Merrill and here at Global X. So it became somewhat of a storytelling vehicle, but also it was potentially a real source of excess return. And it sort of caught on, and when I came over to Global X, we decided to go through the process of trademarking the term, and just a few months ago it came through.
So is the thought, I guess, if you have that deeper, more memorable discussion, that can also lend itself to better investor behavior, just at a high level?
You know, yeah. Well, you know, I think that, first of all, investors are, they want to hear about kind of the more exciting things out there, robotics, artificial intelligence, cars that drive themselves, financial technology, which is important. I don't know how interesting. Internet of Things. So they want to be invested in these things, but potentially some of these higher growth themes mean that you're probably taking a little more risk. So it's a fun point to talk about, but then you have to kind of put that into a broader portfolio to manage your overall risk. So does a client want to talk about style boxes, or do they want to talk about something that's a lot more fun and exciting? I would say the latter. And you include that into a broader portfolio, you can kind of use, you know, the two aspects. And we're using thematics for that kind of conversational piece.
Well, I think that fits in with actually something that I've said before when I think about thematic ETFs. I think you and I both agree that most investors should have a globally diversified portfolio, being broad-based U.S. stocks, international stocks, bonds, so on and so forth. But I think most investors also have some semblance of a, for lack of better words, gambler inside. And I think that if you can have that thematic ETF exposure, have that conversational alpha, at least with the way I view it, that can maybe help them stay on track with those other areas of their portfolio. So let's say you have I'm just making this up high level, a 5% allocation to thematic ETFs. I think to a certain degree, it scratches the itch of investors and may help them stay on track in that other 95% of their globally diversified portfolio. I guess, do you agree with that thought process?
Yeah, and that's exactly what we're kind of trying to convey with this conversational alpha piece. So, you know, I run asset allocation models, and some of those risk profiles, moderate, moderately aggressive, and aggressive, we include a piece of our thematic portfolio, which is a combination of a bunch of different themes that we have, to, you know, satisfy that exposure that a client's looking for in the thematic space. You know, brings up that piece that we can talk about that's exciting, new, and different, but also leaves intact the kind of more traditional portfolio of where it's, you're kind of looking at historical patterns, mean reversion, it's backward looking, you know, history is going to repeat itself again at some point, maybe slightly in a slightly different way. And that's how kind of traditional portfolio management is built on, you know, diversification, where thematics is more forward looking, next time it's going to be different, more of a growth oriented strategy, and fun to talk about.
Well, John, on that note, on the topic of thematics and it being fun to talk about, and I asked this question of our earlier guest as well, but I'd certainly love to hear your take. What's the distinction between a fad and a meaningful longer-term investment thesis or trend when it comes to thematic ETFs? Because I'm sure some people will hear, you know, cannabis, video games, whatever, and that might sound a bit gimmicky to them. So how do you draw the distinction here? Because I think going back to conversational alpha, there are a lot of things that pretty much anyone could make sound exciting. Doesn't mean they're good investments.
Sure. I mean, that's a fair question. And, you know, when I think of a fad, I think of bell-bottom pants or Pokemon Go or Beanie Babies or something that doesn't have that much utility, and sales likely will drop off quickly, versus, you know, what we're looking at as themes, something that's investable, something you have conviction on, and you have a kind of a decent time frame, probably 5 years or more. And in terms of investability, particularly in the space that we're dealing with ETFs and creating ETFs, and our ETFs, our thematic ETFs, are index-based. So you have to have at least, you know, 20 investable companies that have a large focus of their revenues derived from that theme that we're looking at. So they went through the stages of private equity to becoming public, and there's a meaningful amount of companies in the public domain within that particular theme. So that, I would hardly define that as a fad, as kind of that traditional definition of what a fad is. Doesn't mean every theme is going to work out, but you remember that within an ETF, you're diversified. You have more than one company. So I think that's kind of the major difference.
Okay, so GlobalX currently offers 18 thematic ETFs. These span three broad categories. There's disruptive technology, people and demographics, and infrastructure development. And we obviously don't have time to go through all of these, but what are maybe two or three that you find particularly compelling or interesting right now?
Well, I mean, I always find the Internet of Things is super compelling because, you know, first of all, what is the Internet of Things? It's more of like a crossroads of many disruptive themes and technologies. So you have driverless cars. So autonomous vehicles, they depend on the Internet of Things for sensors, networking, downloading maps, and communicating with other cars and you know, global satellites and infrastructure, things like that. Smart cities, smart homes, you know, many of our appliances are connected to our mobile devices, refrigerators, robotic vacuums, things like that. And then robotics, of course, like those robotic vacuums I just mentioned. And the advancement in artificial intelligence, IoT plays, you know, a role in data collection and sharing that information among robots that facilitate machine learning and enhanced abilities. So I think the Internet of Things is a really informative, really important, transformative theme. The companies that would potentially stand to benefit from this IoT theme is connected devices manufacturers. So you have the wearables and and different appliances, network providers of services, and semiconductor manufacturers. So that, it's obviously an important part, communications devices and flash memory. So that kind of feeds the Internet of Themes infrastructure.
And John, what are some of the GlobalX ETFs that you could play that theme through? Just in terms of the specific tickers.
SNSR, sensor.
Okay.
That would be the major one.
Okay.
Another theme that I is particularly that's doing well in the current environment where we are concerned about the coronavirus and potentially more people are working from home. So it's kind of more of the stay home economy. And that would be our video games and esports ETF, and the ticker is HERO. And this particular theme, it's a near-term catalyst for the gaming industry. It could also be kind of signal the final chapter for the console, like the Xbox, PlayStation, Nintendo, because tech giants are preparing for technologies that are don't have a console, and that you're enabling gaming across many different devices and platforms.
John, sort of, well, I was going to ask you, sort of as a tie-in to really video games, but also the Internet of Things, as I was going through your lineup, the cloud computing ETF jumped out at me because this has been one of the more successful ETF launches over the past few years. I don't think it's even been out a year yet. It already has like $450 million in assets. You want to tell us a little bit about that one, and what do you think's been the recipe for success there?
Well, cloud computing is it's foundational to a lot of different technologies. I mean, you have different categories. You have software as services, you have platform as services, infrastructure, data centers. So it's really important in terms of infrastructure, and it's also propelling overall innovation. And cloud also enables emerging technologies. Consumers are increasingly engaging with cloud-enabling streaming devices. It also feeds into gaming and other social media. It's also very scalable. It's involved with data collection. It's involved with the Internet of Things. And it's also needed for artificial intelligence. So in terms of the growth, it's a very attractive business model. You have to think about the public cloud. Generally, users are paying a recurring subscription fee, so it's very profitable. It's a more predictable revenue stream, and it's very service-oriented. So almost everything we do is related to the cloud at this point.
John, looking at thematic ETFs as a whole, and given your background managing ETF model portfolios, you might be one of the best people out there to ask this question, but how should thematic ETFs be used in a portfolio? So if investors believe in the cloud computing theme or the video game theme or Internet of Things, how should ETFs like this be incorporated?
I think there's a few ways you can do it. So thematic ETFs shouldn't be a core holding. They should be a satellite exposure. And they can be used as a satellite in a bunch of different ways. One, you may just pick one or two different themes. You may want to pick cloud computing. You may want to use financial technology, fintech. Or so you just, along with your asset allocation model that you have, you might add a few percent of each portfolio of each ETF. What's one way of doing it? Another way would be to select an ETF. We have one ETF that captures many different themes. One of our ETFs, GXTG, is the thematic growth ETF, and that has fintech and e-commerce and social media and longevity and robotics and the Internet of Things included in one ETF. Or, so that captures a bunch of themes, and you can use it as a satellite exposure. Or you can use, say, one of our portfolios or where we look at a variety of different themes. We weight it by forward sales growth. We use about 70% of global X ETFs. You know, in our portfolios, we're open architecture, so we do look outside our suite for ETFs that are relevant in a particular space that we're looking at to create that portfolio. So, you know, those are a few different ways. By selecting whether it be a few portfolio, a few ETFs as a one-off exposure or a portfolio, and using and scaling it in, you know, between a 5 and a 15% bucket, depending on your risk profile, is really a good way to manage risk, provide exposure to these transformative themes that are forward-looking, that are basically saying next time's going to be different. And if you use a collection of themes, you have a better shot of you may not get, in terms of your timing and diversification and whatnot, is probably a better approach.
Well, and I guess just to be clear on that, so if investors are using individual thematic ETFs, they're not using something like GXTG that you mentioned, or they're not using a model portfolio, do you view thematic ETFs as sort of longer-term buy-and-hold options, right? So if you're a believer in the theme, then you invest in it and hope that it works out longer-term, or do you think investors should be more tactical here?
No, I think that it's very, just like with anything, it's very difficult to time the market. And you don't know exactly when there'll be a surge in interest, which will kind of propel stock prices, or there'll be some transformative event within a particular sector. So I think you should have kind of a 5 to 10 year horizon. I think that makes the most sense. But you also should remember that within each different theme, you know, while you can kind of sort of map a theme to a sector, a more traditional sector that it's disrupting, you are getting multiple sectors within a particular theme. And I think that helps the overall diversification. You'd be surprised how, relative to the market, how well these portfolios are holding up in light of the recent increased volatility in the market.
Well, John, we're going to have to leave it there this week. Appreciate the perspective on thematics. I'm sure we'll chat again soon. Thank you very much.
I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me on the call.
That was John Mayer, Chief Investment Officer at Global X. That'll do it for this week's ETF Prime. If you enjoyed the podcast, we would greatly appreciate it if you could drop us a quick review wherever you listen to podcasts. That helps other listeners find the show. You can also send us comments on Twitter at ETF Prime. Next week, I'll be joined by WisdomTree's Jeremy Schwartz. We're going to talk financial markets, also China ETFs, model ETF portfolios. I would say Jeremy's one of the best in the business, so really looking forward to hearing his take on the markets right now. And then Tim Rotolo, CEO and founder of North Shore Indexes, will spotlight the index behind the North Shore Global Uranium Mining ETF. Until then, have a great week, everyone.